You're listening to 96.3 FM or 101.1 FM in Santa Cruz, and this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm speaking with William Rivas Rivas. He's a campaign coordinator for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and he's speaking with us from his office in Norfolk, Virginia. And we're talking about factory farming today. We just talked about how animals are treated in these farms, how they're raised, how they're killed. Now let's spend a little time, though. I'd like to, even though I don't want to rush through the rest of the interview, we've spent quite a bit of time, so maybe we can briefly address some of the other points I wanted to bring up. The next thing I wanted to talk about, William, was health, human health in regards to people who are consuming this. Maybe we could start by talking a little bit about mad cow and bird flu, and then move on to talk about a few more things.
Sure. Well, and I'll be quick. But mad cow and chicken flu, both of them, are really they're a predictable result of treating animals like dirt. Again, we've taken these animals who are normally vegetarian and turned them into carnivores, not only carnivores but into cannibals. The mad cow is when they have this unnatural, this misshaped prion, which is just a protein in the brain. And it essentially starts eating holes in the brain of the cow. Or actually, when we should mention that any animal that has a brain has the ability to get mad cow. So you could essentially have a mad chicken, a mad pig. There's mad deer and mad cows. So all animals. So don't think if you're not eating cows that you're safe. I mean, all animals can suffer this, and it's because of their unnatural diet. We have, in our effort to grow these animals so rapidly, we have been feeding slaughtered animals, dead animals, back to animals. So we're feeding chickens back to chickens, pigs back to pigs, cows back to cows.
Partly to reduce cost, isn't that right?
Of course. Well, there's
bottom line.
Exactly. Well, exactly. I mean, because once you, these animals, and there's all this waste, I mean, we have to understand that animals produce so much excrement, and when these animals die from unnatural causes, and they're not saleable, you cannot put them into human consumption, what do you do with them? How do you get rid of them? Many of them were chopped up and fed back to animals. Cow's blood, I mean, what are you going to do with the blood after you've bled them? You have to get rid of the waste. And so they made it into a powder, put it back into their feed, and they realized that this protein made these animals grow so much quicker.
And these are vegetarian animals. What happens when they're eating, when they become cannibals?
Well, sure. I mean, we've noticed that that they get sick. And it's funny, when I was doing a little bit of research on mad cow, there were doctors and scientists 50, 60 years ago warning about mad cow, and that they had a different term and they didn't realize the extent of it, but warning people about feeding animals back to animals. I mean, it's really so unnatural, and it's essentially it's a death sentence for these animals, because once they get mad cow, I mean, 100% of these animals will die if they become infected with mad cow. And again, the United States loved to claim that they were mad cow free, and until this past December, we were. I mean, we were certified mad cow free. But you have to understand that we slaughter over 40 million cattle every single year in the United States. And we test about 20,000 out of 40 million. I mean, I'll do the math. That's 0.0005. One out of every 2,000. So if other countries that have mad cow had been using the very same lame testing protocol that the United States had, they could also claim that they were mad cow free. I mean, to put that into perspective, France tests as many cattle in 1 week than we do in 1 year. And after this mad cow has hit the United States, the USDA is still fighting efforts to double the amount of cattle that we were going to test.
Aren't they, in fact, also not stopping this practice of feeding blood and cow meat to cows?
Well, there have been some changes made. I think it was in 1997. And this is something that, again, that the USDA and the industries love to go back to. They actually outlawed feeding ruminant animals back to ruminant animals. And a ruminant animal is a four-legged hoofed animal with multiple stomachs, like a deer or a cow. So there's a rule in 1997 that came out that said you can no longer, because of the mad cow, you can no longer feed these animals back to these same animals. But it was a 100% voluntary rule. This ban, quote-unquote, this ban, all it was is that the feed now had a warning label on the back and read it, you know, and read that said, don't feed back to ruminant animals. But again, you know, if a farmer wants to do that, and again, it's profit motivated, and it's driving someone to do whatever they can to take any shortcuts that they can to grow these animals as quickly as possible to make a greater profit. I mean, how do we know that this is happening? This is not happening. I mean, there was no enforcement whatsoever, zero. And so many farmers in 2001, when a study was done, admitted that they were still feeding animals back to animals. But what happened was, even if we weren't feeding ruminants back to ruminants, these animals were being fed to chickens or to pigs, and these pigs and these chickens were also being chopped up and being fed to cows. So it just took one extra step before they were being fed back to cows.
Right.
So it's something that we definitely have to get rid of. We have to join the World Health Organization, the European Union, Japan, and we have to test, first of all animals for mad cow. Any animal that's slaughtered for human consumption should be tested, and we should refrain from feeding animals back to animals. And those are two small steps that we could take to try to alleviate this mad cow disease.
Other than not eating the cow.
Exactly, well, other than not eating the cow.
Bird flu, what's that? I haven't really looked into it. Can you explain?
Yes, it's the avian influenza. And it's killed, I can't remember what the last figure was, you know, several million birds all throughout Asia. And has killed over 10 people throughout Asia. And there's over 15 different types of avian influenza. And bird flu hit here in the United States last month. It was in the Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, New Jersey, Texas, and they even found bird flu in New York State in some of the live chicken markets. Bird flu kills. It definitely kills the birds, and it has the potential to kill human beings. The first thing that the USDA did, and the first thing that the industry did, was to come out and say that the bird flu strain that was found here in the United States, which was the H7 strain, was different from the H15 or the HN51 strain that was found in Asia. But one thing that they failed to mention was that every single strain of the bird flu, of the avian influenza, has the potential to jump the species barrier, and all of them are extremely dangerous, and even though they're of a low pathogen to begin with, within 6 months they can become much more pathological and be very dangerous to human beings. So again, if we're eating chickens, we're running the risk of bird flu, and even if it doesn't affect you, if you're eating chicken, you're supporting industries that treat these animals so abusively that allows avian influenza to spread like wildfire and will be a death sentence for the birds.
Can you talk about bovine growth hormone, what it is, and maybe in that you can talk about some of the other things that are given to dairy cows and to other animals in the meat industry and what the effect that these hormones and possibly, if you want to talk about antibiotics as well, have on human health?
Well, it's a that's a great question. I mean, I think everybody's heard of bovine growth hormones and how these cows are being fed these bovine growth hormones. And again, it's to make these animals grow more rapidly. And that's, I mean, that's the key that we always have to remember. It's because it's a, this is a profit-motivated business. These industries aren't taking, they don't care about the well-being of these animals, and they truly don't really care about human well-being, because if they did, they certainly wouldn't be in this industry. But the bovine growth hormone forces these animals to grow very quickly, very rapidly, need to mention very unnaturally. And these, you know, the cattle, this, the European Union won't even take our cattle because of the bovine growth hormone, because they're pumped full of these unnatural hormones, and that we don't know the extent of how much it's going to affect human health. And they're pumped up full of antibiotics. Many of these antibiotics are illegal in so many countries, again, to keep them alive in these conditions that would normally, these animals would not be able to survive because of the intensive treatment. And our health is being affected by that. I mean, there's an epidemic in the United States of heart disease, the number one killer in the United States, and cancer and heart attacks. These animals, when they grow so rapidly and so unnaturally, they not only is it very abusive to them, but it's going to affect us, because we are going to ingest their flesh that has been pumped up full of these antibiotics and hormones, and it's something that is very, very dangerous to us. The flesh of any animal is laden with cholesterol, which is the principal culprit of heart disease. Cholesterol is only found in animal products, and thus, so if you look at vegetarians or vegans, they have a heart disease mortality rate. They die of heart disease about 1/10 of the rate of carnivores. A low-fat vegan diet can actually reverse heart disease, and heart disease can be preventable solely based on one's diet. I mean, there are some people that, because of genetics, will suffer from heart disease, but the vast majority of heart disease in the United States could be prevented solely based on a vegetarian diet.
In fact, there's been quite a bit of research done on that, and one of the groups that's done scientific research on that is Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and there's quite a few books. Maybe a little later in the show today, I'll play a rebroadcast of an interview I did with Dr. Neil Barnard from Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and they've done quite a bit of research comparing meat-based and vegan and vegetarian diets.
Sure.
And the health benefits of a vegan and vegetarian diet are pretty much undeniable.
I mean,
from that.
I think all of us would be very hard-pressed to be able to name one friend or one family member that is not affected by obesity or heart disease or have some kind of cancer or heart attack in their lifetime. I mean, all of us are being affected by it. As I mentioned, vegans and vegetarians have 1/10 the rate of or die 1/10 of the rate of heart disease than their carnivorous counterparts, and they also have about a 40% lower rate of many of the cancers that affect carnivores. As we were mentioning, the bovine growth hormone and many of the antibiotics, many of these are toxic to human beings. We have to mention that 95% of human toxic chemical exposure comes from eating animal products. Many studies show that women who eat meat or drink milk or eat fish are suffering from breast cancer up to 4 times the rate of women who either don't eat meat or who eat meat very, very sparingly. So, again, we have to take into consideration that when animals are being raised so intensively on factory farms and in slaughterhouses, pesticides and hormones and antibiotics are used to keep these animals alive in conditions that would otherwise kill them immediately.
I just got a book also by Joel Fuhrman. He wrote a book called Eat to Live, The Revolutionary Formula for Fast and Sustained Weight Loss. In that book, he demonstrates research that's shown that through his vegan diet that he gives his patients, or his patients adhere to, he's managed to reverse many conditions, diabetes, heart disease, etc., where people can go completely, eventually can completely go off of the medications they're on for those illnesses. And that's a great book, Eat to Live by Joel Fuhrman. His last name is spelled Fuhrman.
And Dr. Dean Dornish as well. Mm-hmm. He's got a book out, the name escapes me, but if anybody just types in Dr. Dean Ornish.
Right.
And he had he put two groups of people, one on a completely vegetarian diet and one on a meat-based and dairy-based diet, and took a look at the rates of heart disease, and he actually was able to reverse heart disease in many of his patients solely based on an animal-free diet.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about organic meats? Some people might say, well, I only eat organic meat, and therefore I'm avoiding all the hormones and the antibiotics. And I think some people who eat organic meat think that the animals are treated better. What do you know about that?
Well, when the mad cow scare came out, and there was a lot of people who said that they only ate certified organic meat, and therefore they could not have to worry about that. But no, if someone's eating animal flesh, regardless if it's coming from a factory farm or from an organic farm, they still have to worry about high fat, cholesterol, and the unnatural ingestion of animal protein, which is overconsumed by most Americans and which does not offer any type of fiber, any type of complex carbohydrates, all of which is essential to the prevention of disease and the proper digestion of food. So it's still very detrimental to your health.
What about how the animals
maybe
are treated?
A little bit less than the regular meat, but exactly. But what about the animals? These animals are still raised in unnatural conditions. These animals are still bred for the single purpose to be slaughtered. And they're still going to suffer from many of the things that take place on the more conventional factory farms and in slaughterhouses. They're still going to be slaughtered for their flesh. And so if you're eating animals, you're still paying people to abuse them, whether it's on an organic farm or whether it's in a factory farm. Again, there's virtually no there's no enforcement of the Humane Slaughter Act, so you're just putting, you're putting your trust into someone who's actually trying to make a buck off of killing animals, and they say that they've treated these animals humanely.
And the animals, you may have said this, but the animals that are raised on organic farms are slaughtered in the same slaughterhouses with the same treatment.
Sure. I mean, I think if you're eating organic meat and you feel that you can sleep a little bit better at night, I think we need to think about that. Again, it's a nightmare for the animals. It's horrible for your health, but it's also detrimental to the environment. I mean, there's just a number of reasons why you should not be eating meat. If there was only three arguments to why you shouldn't eat meat, one of which is the treatment of animals, or two for your health, or three in the environment, even if we, and it's not possible, but even if we gave you 2 points, if you're eating animals, you're still supporting industries that are so detrimental to the environment. Not only is it a living hell for the animals, but we waste so much. It's such an efficient way to raise these animals. Over half of the water that's used in the United States, and that's, water for all purposes that's used in the United States, is used to raise animals for food. I mean, it's so wasteful. For example, a vegetarian diet, a completely vegetarian diet, a vegan, would require about 300 gallons of water to survive per day if you took consideration how much water we needed for the raising of our food, fruits and vegetables and grains. A carnivore requires almost 5,000 1,000 gallons of water. That's over 10 times, almost 5,000 gallons of water to raise their food. I mean, it takes about, you waste about 20 calories into an animal just to get one calorie out. I mean, that is so inefficient. We use about 90% of the agricultural land in the United States. 90% is used to raise animals for food. So there's an extreme amount of land that's being wasted that could be used, again, to grow vegetables and grains and fruits to feed more animals.
To feed more people.
Feed a lot more people.
Uh-huh.
And also the
Waste of water and land and pesticides and all that stuff they
sure.
put on the feed.
Of course. Well, animals that are raised for food produce anywhere between 130 to 150 times the amount of excrement a human being will produce. And generally speaking, there are no sewage systems for these animals, so much of the excrement will wind up in our water. And it's the number one source of water pollution in the United States. The number one source of water pollution is the raising of animals for food.
And in hog farms, that's especially true, right? I've heard quite a bit about the pollution from hog farms being a major environmental problem.
Absolutely. And that's, that's in my neighborhood here. I mean, Smithfield Foods, which is the world's largest hog producer, based in Smithfield, Virginia, they have a number of hog farms, these huge, massive hog farms where they're killing millions of hogs every single year throughout North Carolina and Virginia. And their waste, what to do with the waste is they've saturated the land with waste, and they have these huge lagoons of waste, and it's an environmental challenge on what to do with it.
Wastewater ponds, basically, huh?
Yes.
The environment was my next question, so maybe if there's anything you want to add in regards to that that you haven't already said, this would be a good time, I think, for you.
Yeah, I mean, again, a couple simple things to remember. Over half the water that's used is used to raise animals. If you take into consideration that a vegetarian would waste about 300 gallons a day, a carnivore wastes anywhere between 4,000 and 5,000 gallons a day. We spend about 87%, almost 90% of our land, of agricultural land, to raise animals.
To raise feed for animals, right?
Exactly, mm-hmm. as well. It's something that I think you and I were talking about off-air, was the methane. 5 to 10% of the total greenhouse gases comes from cows producing these massive amounts of methane. And so that also is detrimental to our air. I mean, just drive by any feedlot or any lot that's raising cattle, and you'll smell it miles and miles away. The water pollution, again, these animals are producing about 130 times the amount of excrement that a human would, with virtually no sewage system at all, and this will wind up in our water. Again, the energy, so much energy is wasted in our materials feeding into these animals. The deforestation, so many, we're getting rid of all the forest so that we could raise these animals. I mean, we're clearing plots of land so that we can raise more and more animals. Again, it's raising animals for food is probably the most abusive thing that you can do to the environment, and if somebody is an environmentalist, they have to be vegetarian simply for the environmental purposes.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about health. Not a whole lot, but I just had a couple questions I didn't get to, and one, I wanted to get your response to these Atkins and other low carb diets.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very popular thing that has sprouted up here in the U.S. especially.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you make of these diets in terms of health? I mean, it's pretty clear what their impact on the environment and on animal suffering is. But what about health?
Right. Well, I mean, again, as I mentioned, that one of the one of the epidemics in our society is obesity, and people have turned to these fad diets like Atkins or the South Beach diet or whatever these other diets are in an effort to lose weight. And there might be a significant weight loss, but within 5 years people will be weighing, if not the same, they'll be weighing more. But when we take a look at our diet, we should be taking consideration our health and not necessarily our vanity. And Harvard researchers have showed that a very meaty diet, like the Atkins diet, will increase your risk of colon cancer up to 3 times. And there are a number of other issues, cardiovascular problems, and many other diseases from eating such a high protein and low carbohydrate diet like the Atkins diet. Again, you may lose weight, but it's going to affect your health in the long haul. And the Atkins diet will prove in the long haul to be a very detrimental diet for your health.
It's very low in fiber too, which is part of the reason there's so many colon problems related to it. And
sure.
I think prostate cancer has also been linked to high meat consumption, and 1 in 3 men are affected, I think, by prostate trouble, if not cancer.
Right. So. Well, the Atkins diet actually did a study, a 6-month study, which they never published, that found that 68% of the people that were on this diet were suffering from severe constipation. It also, it's funny to mention, but 65% of them were suffering from halitosis, which is just bad breath. Over half of them were suffering from headaches, and many of them were actually suffering hair loss. Nearly 70% of the people that were on this diet had very, very low fiber, and which in effect was the issue of the constipation. The diet has been linked to an increased risk of kidney stones, bone loss. Researchers at the University of Texas revealed that the Atkins diet, which is a high protein, very low carbohydrate diet, increases the risk of kidney stones, which increases the risk of bone loss. So if you're worried about your weight, if you're worried about your health, you should eat a very well-balanced vegetarian diet that's very high in fiber, that eat green leafy vegetables to get your calcium. And not only is it going to improve your health, I think it will improve your well-being, knowing that you're not supporting industries that treat animals so abusively and also treat the environment so abusively as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned the bone loss. Many doctors have researched it and written about how high-protein diets actually flush, especially animal proteins, flush calcium from your bones and flush it out of your system. And this has led to an increase in osteoporosis. And actually, some people have compared, you know, how in Asia, the diet is significantly different in terms of how much meat is eaten, and as opposed, they eat a lot of, in general, the diet is more based around vegetables and noodles and tofu and things like that than it is
right.
around meat, and the incidence of osteoporosis is much lower in Asia than it is here, except when you see McDonald's and other high-fat, high-animal protein dietary choices moving into, say, Japan, for example, then you'll see a lot more obesity in children, and there's all kinds of health problems that have come along with Western-style
sure.
Fast food moving in there. I wanted to ask you...
I'm glad
you
mentioned Japan.
Something?
I lived there for 4 years. And the first thing people always say is, like, oh, it must have been super easy to be vegan there. I think at one point it would have been. But as you mentioned, they've started importing... Not only they've imported our bad habits, and they're suffering from many of the diseases, and I think we'll see this more in the next 10 to 20 years. They're suffering from many of the diseases that we're suffering from, and heart disease and obesity, because of their radical change in diet, where they at one point subsisted on an animal-free diet and many soy, but now they're eating massive amounts of flesh, and they're starting to pay the price for it as well.
Where do you mentioned you're a vegan? Where do you get your protein? A lot of people who eat meat think they need to eat it for the protein and think they wouldn't be healthy if they didn't. Can you talk about the alternative diet?
Well, I wish you could take a look at me because I'm not a small guy. I mean, I go to the gym, I exercise a lot, I ride my bike, I love to run. I think I'm in really good shape. I just went to the doctor. My cholesterol is just fine. You'll rarely ever see a vegetarian or a vegan with any kind of issues with cholesterol. Where do cows get their protein? I mean, our problem here in the United States is not our lack of protein. Our problem in the United States is the ingestion of too much protein. I mean, we're getting several times the amount of protein that we should be getting, and this is an effect affecting our health. You should be eating a very well-balanced diet that's high in green leafy vegetables, that's high in fruits and grains, and you will be able to get everything that you need in your diet without resorting to having to eat animal flesh.
Whole grains, I would add.
Absolutely.
Like quinoa and brown rice and things like that.
Right, but I mean, I love to eat. So when I eat, of course I'll eat salads, and I do enjoy eating raw food. But you know, you can get protein from soy, and I love eating veggie burgers. I just got back from New York City, where I was doing some demonstrations there, and New York City has a number of vegetarian restaurants. Well, you being in California, you should know that. And there's tons of vegetarian restaurants where, you know, if you don't like to cook and you're not really sure how you can eat vegetarian, go to one of these vegetarian restaurants. You can have vegan lasagna, vegetarian chicken, vegetarian barbecue ribs. You can even buy that from the store, just about any store. So not only will you be able to get your protein, you're going to be able to get your protein in foods that you would normally eat the animal counterpart, but now you can eat something that tastes just as good, if not better. It's better for your health, and again, it's not detrimental to the environment.
I would add personally that tempeh is very high in protein.
Of course.
Mushrooms have a lot of protein, like shiitakes and maitakes, and they're also really medicinal, good for your health. Mm-hmm. They've been shown to fight cancer, maitakes, in research. And I think leafy greens like kale also, do they have some protein? And sprouts as well have
exactly.
proteins.
And these are all just so delicious, and you can... you can enjoy it and knowing that you're not supporting an industry that's so abusive to animals, so abusive to your health, and so abusive to the environment.
So let's talk about the USDA. They're supposed to be regulating the industry, but there's some problems with that. Can you talk about that?
Well, again, you know, you have to, if you're going to have an organization that claims to be committed to animal welfare, but yet is ignoring the bulk of the suffering within their own authority, we're never going to be able to get to where we want to be. As I mentioned in the Humane Slaughter Act, these animals are supposed to be rendered unconscious, but first of all, people are failing to comply with that. It's very, very hard to enforce. And these animals don't all of a sudden develop the capacity to suffer, you know, at the moment where they're going to die. I mean, there's been this intense suffering throughout their miserable life, from the moment that they were born on a factory farm, during the entire time that they were raised, from the hellish ride during transport, and at the moment that they arrive to the slaughterhouse to be slaughtered. I mean, that's one glaring problem. Also, the people that are in these positions of authority within the USDA should not be in the same bed, so to speak, as the people that are in the industry that hold these very powerful positions within the industry. We have to be able to separate the two so that there can be a very clear and very distinguished separation, and so that there will be no sense of doing favors for an industry when, again, we're trying to eradicate so much of the cruelty that's inherently involved in raising animals for food.
You're listening to 96.3 FM or 101.1 FM in Santa Cruz, and this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm speaking with William Rivas Rivas. He's a campaign coordinator for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and he's speaking with us from his office in Norfolk, Virginia, and we're talking about factory farming today.